afternoon, everyone. This is Karina, and welcome to everyone to today's call. I hope most of you have been able to join. So before we start talking about today's topics, would you mind saying your name here on the call?
Cam McFarland.
Michaela Collins.
No. George McKinley.
Jeanette Rosenberini.
Beth Stoffmacher.
Vicky Scott. Gail Osborne, UNM CDD.
Nancy Shane.
Susan Russell, Maine.
Andrew Sickley, Maine.
Roxy Lamar, Anchorage.
Press DeLeon and Marvin Daniels from Kennedy Krieger, Baltimore.
Cherie Bulow and Barb Thomas from Iowa, you said?
Terry Murphy from Idaho.
Ann Robinson from Ohio State Nisonger Center.
Stacey Bliss from University of Montana.
Pam Graff from the Vanderbilt Kennedy
Full
Center
Marathon,
Land.
Or joining the team as a virtual racer, we've got a space for you. As a member of the Kennedy Krieger team, you can register for free by committing to raise funds for the Institute's spinal cord injury program. You'll also receive additional perks and surprises, such as a team Under Armour shirt, pasta party, and a hospitality tent. For more information on the event,
well, thank you, everyone, for introducing yourselves. And just a quick note, please try not to put us on hold because we will hear music and we cannot. There's no way for us to mute that, or there's no way for me to mute that. So that kind of puts a break in the call. First thing, I thought it would be good to go over all the important dates and deadlines that are upcoming. I'm going to also send out an email with everything, but I'm going to briefly mention all the deadlines, and if you have any questions, just feel free to ask them. They're in no particular order. So the USET PPR to AIDD is due, as usual, July 30th. This is the typical deadline. It's the hard deadline. And just remember, it's July 30th, not the 31st. Until then, you can still edit data in years to make sure that everything is correct in the PPR. Make sure to enter the project record for your core grant. And if you have any questions about the numbers that you see in the PPR, if it looks like they are not correct, feel free to email me and I can help you, figure out why numbers may not be correct, what changes you might need to make for the numbers to be fine. And other than these specific questions that I said, feel free to email me. But are there any, bigger questions about the USET PPR and its submission?
Hi, Corinna. This is Zeba from New Jersey. How are you?
Hi, Zeba. Good. How are you?
Good. I emailed you about this also, but we didn't get any new guidance in terms of submission or any data guidelines or anything for this year. So we're okay in that category. So just continue doing what we're doing. There are no changes in terms of submitting reports or data entry or anything for this year.
No, it's going to be the same as last year.
Okay.
So if it helps, I send a refresher about the new process, because last year we did start a new process you know, when you submit the report in years, it's no longer automatically sent out to AIDD, to your project officer at AIDD. Instead, you need to you receive an email with a PDF attached, and you need to upload that.
Okay. So same procedures as we followed last year, but no other new guidance?
No. Nothing. Not, okay. No. No.
Okay. So we're good. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Any other questions here? Okay. I'll take that as a no. And the next item on the list is the CAI, now with a new name of CARES module for land and DBP programs. That is due on July 24th. I'm sorry, 24th. So it is the Friday of next week. This is submitted directly in here. So it's, you know, you just complete the numbers there and hit submit, and that's all. For this also, there's nothing new, the same procedures as in the past for those of you who completed in prior years. And that's pretty much it about it. Are there any questions about the CI module? Okay, I'll take that as a no. The next item on the list is the data export from NIRS to the EHB. And those of you who are with an MCHB program should have received an email from me with all the files for the data export. Basically, I downloaded for each center the export files and sent them over to you and your director. And the files look exactly as the files that are sent over to MCHB. It's the template that we use from MCHB. So it does. So the files do contain lots of information, but hopefully you can go through them and look at all the records, see everything that is included there, if any changes need to be made. And I don't know. I have a couple emails in my inbox to reply with, you know, how to fix what's in the export files. And if you have questions about what's included in the export files versus what's in years and how to change the data, so what for the final export, please do feel free to email me, and I'm happy to help with that. In terms of the timeline for the data export, it's going to be kind of the same or similar to previous years. And we are going to send over the data on August 21st, and it should be uploaded into the EHB by September 18th. During this time, almost a month, MCHB will look at the data, they review it, and make sure everything looks good before they upload it. I'm going to also send out the timeline so you have it in writing, but I just thought I'd mention it here too. Are there any questions about the data export, the timeline, the anything? Okay, then I'll take that as a note too, and I assume you're going to send me more questions in the email about the export files I just sent. Also, as I mentioned that I sent the export files, if by chance I did not reach the right person, feel free to email me so I know for the future. Did someone have a question? I just heard some noises. Okay.
Karina, I didn't receive any actual files attached to the email, just a list of the files that were being included. So were there
What center are you? I'm sorry, I did not recognize.
I'm sorry, I'm Vicki Scott, and you're used to dealing with Jeannie Maurice, but she's no longer here. And we're at the UNM Center for Development and Disability.
Okay, I will and double check on that.
Yeah, you address it to Tammy, Sandy Heimerall, and Jeannie Maurice.
Well, okay.
Update that information. Our new data manager is Gail Osborne.
Okay, I'll make sure to send you the email then.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Then the next, was there any other question? Did I hear something about the phone? Okay, I guess no. About the NIRS fiscal year 2016 iteration. So as you know, or maybe if you're new to the job, you do not know, but every year at the end of the fiscal year, the new or the old fiscal year closes and the new fiscal year is rolled out. What this means is that this is the last month that you can still edit data for fiscal year 2015. And if needed, if you discover data is missing, you can also enter new records this month. But after July 31st, we are going to close NIRS to roll out fiscal year 2016, the data set. So you have until July 31st to edit any data for this year. And then on Monday, August 3rd, we are going to close NIRS and we're going to roll out 2016 and test if there's anything not working. And then we plan on having it up and running by Friday of the same week, August 7th. And that's at the latest. It will probably be, NIRS will probably be up and running before that time. There are no major changes, or there are no planned changes actually right now to be rolled out with a new fiscal year. We made some changes during the fiscal year, as you know, with the product dissemination tool and a few other small changes, but there's no big change being rolled out. Is there any question about the fiscal year and how this works or how this impacts your data entry?
Corinna, this is Pam from the Vanderbilt Land. So on the spreadsheets that you sent today, it looks like that you the data on those spreadsheets was up until the end of June, because I've entered some things in July and they're not there. But is that to be expected? Well, does that mean they're not going to be exported into the EHB, or they will be?
That's a good question. They will be exported. What happened is I downloaded all the files and then I emailed them. And mm-hmm. due to, you know, all the files for all the centers that had to be downloaded, I started on Monday or Friday and then finished sending them a week later. I mean, on Friday the 3rd and finished them a week later. So anything you would have entered during this time was not included in the file.
Okay, but they will be uploaded into the EHB.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. Thanks.
Yes, and for anyone who, you know, I mean, if there are just a few records, it's probably not worth the effort. But if anyone is going to enter a lot more data between now and the end of July and needs me to rerun the files to mm-hmm. resend them to you to check them, I'm happy to do that. So just email me and I can do that.
Thank you.
Okay. Sure. Okay. So are there any more questions about this section of upcoming deadlines and reporting information?
Karina, this is Larissa from Alaska, and you mm-hmm. said about rerunning the file. So Raylin and I are going through right now and reviewing all of the activity and product files.
Okay.
So we don't need to have you rerun them after we've checked them, right?
No, only if you if you're going to enter lots of data between now and end of July, then I can rerun them. But otherwise, no. And you can review them and make the changes in yours, and that's fine.
Okay. If we add any new activities, does that matter?
Activities are not exported, so those do not matter. The files that I send. So only products, long-term trainees, and faculty and staff are the directory data set.
Okay, so if we make some changes to the directory, then that should be, we should let you know.
You can. I can rerun the files for you if you want, if it's easier to check in the files. If you do not want the files again, then you don't need to let me know. We will, or what I'm trying to say also is that we are going to rerun all the files in August after the fiscal year has closed. So these are just draft files for you to review, but we are not going to go by these files at all.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Brenna, this is Vicki at Cincinnati. When we opened ours, it looks like it was reporting for 2014 rather than the fiscal year 15. Can you double check on that? Because a lot of our, we have a lot of our former faculty showing up in the, as well as some of the old files. So I'm not sure if that was, if anybody else had that issue or not.
I can look at your file specifically to see why, if there is a reason that the old records are included. I will say, though, that the fiscal year column says 2014 in the files, simply because that is the MCHB fiscal year. As you know, NYERS and MCHB go by different fiscal years in terms of designation. So it's the same time frame, but in NYERS it's 2015, in MCHB it's 2014. For the purpose of the export and uploading to the EHB, we change the year in the files to 2014, but it should all be 2015 data.
Okay. Well, that looks different then.
But I will follow up, and if you mentioned the directory is slightly different than the other data set, because it doesn't have a fiscal year designation, so you just need to select if a person should be included in the export or not. And that's the only field we go by. We do not go by status, whether it's display or inactive or anything like that. So even if you have old staff, but they may have the field checked to include in the upload, and that's why we include the profile.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll go in.
Okay. So, yeah, and I can look, check your file against what's at the center and clarify that with you.
Okay. Great.
Okay. Okay. I guess there are no more questions here, right? Okay. Then I will now go on to a topic that is for you to talk about. And at this time of year, I guess everyone is worried about entering data and making sure that everything is entered in years, because there were a few suggestions in the survey to discuss about entering data. What are some tips to get staff to remember to enter their data? What is the role of the data coordinator in facilitating the data entry? Basically, how do you make it happen to be sure that you have all the data in years? And I'll start by saying that I know that that's a common, common concern at centers, that there's not a simple solution or a solution that works for everyone. But I do know that some centers use various funny tricks, funny emails they send out, or incentives, or, so if you have such examples, feel free to share them with others. Remember that we have new data coordinators on the in our group too, so may not be aware of all the, all the tricks you need to do to get the data in years.
Farina, this is Larissa from Alaska. we used a couple of different things. The year before last, we tried incentives where every quarter we would do a drawing from people who had entered data during that quarter, and they got, I don't remember, it was maybe a $10 gift card. And then at the end, everybody who had entered data in all four quarters, their name was put in the hat and drawn for a grand prize at the end of the year. And it wasn't much. I don't even remember what it was. It might have been 25. We didn't have a single person, by the way, that entered data in all four quarters. So that didn't really work very well. So this year we tried something different. We actually held three or four separate pizza parties where our boss provided just cheap, you know, $10 Costco pizzas, and someone else from the staff brought in a salad, and we met in a big conference room, in our staff conference room, and people brought their laptops, and if they didn't have laptops, we have a couple loaner laptops, and we just sat as a group, and if people had questions, then I was available to answer their questions, to show them, remind them how to duplicate records, and just get them started, and a lot of people finished their data entry mostly finished it at those sessions, and then they were much quicker to finish the ones that came for the end of the year. So that pizza party worked really well for us, and it wasn't that expensive.
Excuse me, what was that state? Which state are you coming from?
Alaska.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi, this is Nancy from New Mexico, and we tried a couple of things this year. One was an idea that we got last year at the conference from another center, which is one of their center-defined fields. They included a variable about whether a record was complete or incomplete. And that just so then people can put records in before something takes place and before they have all the information that they need to complete it. But then it's they can at least create a placeholder. And the other thing that we did was at the beginning of the fiscal year, around August, and again, I think in January, we held these office hours with various people in our center and sat down and created what we called skeleton records. So whatever trainings that they knew might be coming up or technical assistance that might be coming up, we just created these skeleton records so that they would prompt people after the event had taken place to finish them. And then they could kind of know at the beginning of the year what was expected as well.
Hi, this is Lori in Nashville. I just wanted to add, I send out approximately quarterly emails reminding people to varying degrees of success. The other thing I do for things like a couple of our call lines where basically I have them provide me the information and I enter the record, I ask for that those updates quarterly. That way, A, I remember to do it, and B, if I'm looking for information about, you know, how many calls have come in or something like that during the year, I've got it, and that's been pretty helpful.
Well, thank you.
I was going to add something in just on the note of when you're adding activities, the person that mentioned using a user-defined field. I similarly have done that for a number of years now, and I call it the ready to submit miscellaneous field. It has three entries. Author approves for submission, meaning that they signed off on it, but author is still editing. That helps me know that they're still continuing to work on the task and that I shouldn't be worrying about the errors that are being generated. And finally, if I do find some errors, that I flag it for the author to revise. And it makes it easier for people to find anything that I have a problem with, because I say to them, hey, you've got an issue, go search for your flagged ones. And that certainly accelerates the end of the year data cleanup for some of the people. That was it.
Okay, well, thank you. I mean, these are great ideas, and I find it great that you're using the custom fields for a useful purpose. And I think this is great for others to see. I mean, those who are not on the call, that they can use the custom field in this way. And I also think the pizza party is a great idea. May I ask, how many pizza parties did you host over the year?
I think this year we hosted three pizza parties.
Okay.
And I think we'll do that next year, but we'll start earlier. It was very successful. We had the whole research team came to one research party, and then a couple other staff from different areas came as well, but we were just able to help all of them. There are two of us that are data coordinators at our center, and so we were both available to help. I know that probably some centers only have one. We're just fortunate to have two.
Got it. Okay.
So who will pay for the pizza party, and who will pay the gift cards?
Our boss actually contributed that. That was just something that she agreed to do because she knows the data is so important. So we tried the gift card. That did not work very well. But food seems to work really well. You could also do something if you have no money or your boss won't contribute, is to say, hey, we're going to have a big data party. Make it festive, you know, send out a flyer that's got, you know, party balloons on it and says NERS data party. You know, please RSVP if you're able to attend. Come get help with your data entry. Bring a dish and make it a potluck.
Thank you.
Thank you. And are there any more questions or anything else that anyone wants to add to this? Okay. Then I'll take that as a no. And moving on to a few reporting questions that came up. Sorry. And the first one about social media and how do you categorize Facebook page post and other related social media data. And I think we've had some discussion before about this because websites and social media are not meant to be reported as products because they are just vehicles for information dissemination or for product dissemination. And what should be recorded are the products that are actually disseminated, like an article or a newsletter, etc. But since social media does play an important role, how do you still try to capture in years all the efforts you make to use social media?
Product, but we don't do any numbers associated with it.
So by that, do you mean, do you add your Facebook page as a product or your Twitter account?
Yes. So it'd be a web, I don't know how we classify it. Yeah, it's just a product, but we don't put any numbers with it because there's no, I mean, the numbers associated with a Facebook account are kind of dumb. I mean, they don't really mean anything.
Corinna, do we not count our website as a product?
Yeah.
Is that what I heard?
Well, theoretically, no, it should not be counted as a product. A website should be counted as a product only if it's a standalone resource. Say your center develops a website that's on a certain topic and that's, you know, a resource in itself. center websites are not supposed to be entered as product, and nor are Facebook pages or Twitter accounts. But I know this is happening because centers want to get credit for the work they do. So that's why I thought I'd ask how others do this. If others do report their, do others report their center websites?
Well, under web-based products, it includes social networking sites and the web, so that's why we have included it. It's stated there in that definition page.
The definition does state it, yeah.
I know. It's a very blurry border because that's what, you know, that's the guidance we've been told, that they need to be like bigger websites of, you know, standalone resources, not just the regular sites or social media pages. But I do understand they are listed there also.
What if a center has more than one website? Like what if like our center has two projects that have their own website besides our main website?
Well, the project websites fit perfectly as an example of standalone resources that can definitely be entered as
can be product.
As a product, yes.
Okay.
Do others enter their Facebook pages or their social media? I'm asking this without trying to necessarily correct anyone, because I just know that it's one of those situations where the guidance is behind the technology. Technology has moved faster and social media has grown to become an important aspect. So I'm asking this, you know, what others are doing, and, you know, if we have discussions about redefining products at some point, we can also know what centers are doing.
We do, but we
Karina, this is
Facebook
George McKinley.
We use Facebook to deliver content. So, I mean, we're not using it to say, hi, oh, I just ate lunch. We're actually posting research or resources, or like Kim's action alert today on ESEA. We post that.
Okay.
This is George McKinley.
It's hard to do that when I'm back and forth. Anyways, yeah. We're the same. It's not about saying hello, you get lots of likes and all that stuff. It's just how you reach your audience. For example, we're running a Tumblr now because that's what's connecting with our undergraduate students. We have to understand each of those, yeah, and that's the problem. Just saying it's social media as if it has very little value, it actually has greater value for reaching specific audiences and being able to distribute the content. So you're right, it is an easel. But it's quite a project to make that easel, and also to develop the training and the resource and the personnel to adopt those newer resources. And that's how we stay relevant, especially for the changing society. And also, I'd like to add that it makes it important for us to engage people at a social level. And that means also that the sites are accessible and we engage, you know, Facebook is not particularly friendly. It's usable, but it's not friendly. But it also means that we have people who are using or able to advocate for their accessibility needs within the social environment. And that means it's also impacting the general quality of life on people as well. So it's important that we're in those forums and that we record them.
This is Michaela from Vermont. I think we put them in. We put the social media outlets in as one product. I put in our Facebook as one product, as a web-based product, and our Twitter as one product. I think just to show that we are using it and that we're up to date. The data is not going to be, you know, collect the numbers, and, you know, that's pretty much accepted, I believe. So I think just so that people know there is a Twitter account, a Facebook account, you know, that people, if people are searching.
Hi, this is Annette from the University of Oregon. I just want to let you know that we had a focus group meeting with our Community Advocacy Council, our CAC, and we had them looking over our new website, and they all whipped out their smartphones and started trying to find us on Facebook, and we didn't have a Facebook page, so they sort of requested that we create one. So that's on our list of things to do for this year. it seems that, yes, technology is moving forward, and we need to, too, if we want to keep people visiting our sites and our programs.
Yeah, this is
Hi,
Nancy.
This is Jeannie Ramos from the Bronx on Children's Evaluation Rehabilitation Center. We put in the CERS website in last year, and we're using it as a dissemination product because it's, you know, it's something that gets updated and so forth. We also have our newsletter that feeds off of that and other information that the community can go into and look at, the EITI newsletters that we produce and so forth. And also our Facebook page, we put it in last year, and I put it in as a dissemination also because people are still going in and looking at what's in there. So we use it in that form. Like, I don't put it every year as a new product, but it's something that's disseminated.
Yeah, this is Nancy from New Mexico, and I just have a comment and a request. And one thing that I love about products in NEARS is that they are publicly searchable. So I always think about the products as something that someone outside our USAID and our beneficiaries might be interested in. And I used the search function a couple of times last week. One was I found out that somebody in our center wanted to put together a video about micro enterprises. Well, that's not the most common topic in the world. So I used the search function and found out that Alaska has put together really a very, very nice 40-page document about micro enterprising and how one should go about helping someone who'd like to do that. And then the other was about partners in policymaking, and I know some different centers do that project. We do that project. And so I was interested in seeing what other people did and found that somebody out there, and I can't remember who it is, has a youth-oriented version for Partners in Policymaking, and the person who runs that program here was really very interested in seeing about that and following up with that center's lead on that project. So I love that search function. My request about it, though, is that you, when you go into NEARS or even outside NEARS, I mean, anybody can do it. You don't have to have a NEARS login or anything to do that search. You have to pull things up fiscal year by fiscal year. And it'd be nice if you could put in a range, like the last 3 years or the last 5 years, something like that, just so you didn't have to run that search quite so many times. So that's it.
Well, thank you. And it's great to hear about using the public search on our website. It helps us when we say centers must have complete data because, for such searches. In terms of your request, are you referring to when you run a search in NEARS too?
Well, I don't think I went through NEARS to do it. I think I just went to the AUCD website where you can either log into NEARS or you can just go to the, I think it's a search function or the public function where you go in and you say, oh, do you want to look at products or do you want to look at projects? And put in the keywords there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that is the public search on our website.
Yeah.
And I made note of that suggestion. I'm not sure how easy or if, how easy that is to do it or if it's going to
right.
be done.
I can do is ask.
Yes, and I will pass it on. It probably or definitely will not happen before the end of the fiscal year.
Sure.
In NEARS, if you ever want to run a search for multiple years, it is possible to use next to the fiscal year drop-down menu, there is a plus button where you can add multiple fiscal years.
Mm.
But, of course, it's only for your center, so you
right.
do not have access to searching
right.
other centers' data.
Thanks, Karina.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Well, thank you to everyone for all your useful input about how you use social media I think this is really great and explaining where you come from and all the effort that you put into maintaining the social media accounts. Does anyone have any other questions about this or anything else to add? Okay.
Karina, just a comment about to follow up on the search criteria. Mm-hmm. There is an option on the drop-down to search all years for the last person who was trying to search.
Mm-hmm. Oh, is that right? Okay.
Yeah, if you go all the way, it's yeah. hidden. So the last option.
The last thing? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate that.
Off. It's more than what we need, but it's everything.
Right. Thank you.
Well, thank you, Ziva. I completely forgot about that. Indeed, it's the same as in years, but I forgot there's the option there. Yeah.
All right.
Okay. Well, since I guess we talked quite a bit about social media, let's move on to the next one about collaborating agency categories and specifically cultural and tribal collaborations, and what's the best way to reflect those, and if the person who asked the question wants to also expand on it a little bit more, that would be great.
This is Lisa from Alaska. That was my question. We have quite a bit of tribal and collaboration up here, and we got into this discussion because we didn't know where to put it, and people were putting it in the other category, which doesn't really end up coming out in the report. So it's almost like you don't get credit for acknowledgement for doing any kind of tribal collaboration when we do quite a bit. We ended up choosing provider organization. The reason being is that our tribal organizations tend to, they do more than just one thing. So, you know, you end up with an organization that does multiple things, like they have health services and social services. They might do real estate. They might have a disability function. They might have vocational rehabilitation. They're like a big umbrella, and under that big umbrella, they do a lot of things. So trying to find the right kind of agency to describe them as, other than using other. And one of the things I'd really love to see, since cultural and tribal collaboration is supposed to be so important, is that it seems like it would make sense to add that the type of agency to say, you know, this is a tribal or cultural agency that we collaborated with. But in any case, that was my question. We chose provider. I was curious as to how other people might have thought that through. Does anyone out there work with tribes or other cultural groups?
My name is Jeannie. I'm from the Bronx, and we don't, but if I had to choose, I would probably pick community or faith-based organization.
But they're not faith-based. They're.
But yeah. It says community or.
Yeah, they're community.
Okay, community or faith-based?
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's what I would choose, but I don't think you're totally wrong saying provider organization, because if they are providers.
Yeah, they do. They do a lot of that type of provider services, but didn't think about community. I mean,
This is Roxy, also from Alaska. Community might not be the best category for us, only because a lot of these organizations are not really community organizations. They're regional or statewide.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that that would be misrepresenting them to call them community organizations.
This is
want to add tribal communities as a box of its own, because then where do you stop? You know, all the different types of people that we work with, that would be too many boxes.
Right.
There's already a long list of boxes, but I'm just saying, since we have such a focus on cultural, it seems to make sense to me that there should be a box for that. Mainly just because, I mean, maybe we're the only, you said, that really does work and collaborate so extensively with tribal and cultural, other cultural entities. We have Alaska Natives, and we have large populations of other people from the Pacific Islands, Philippines. I mean, just we have quite a few various cultural and tribal people that we work with here. So finding a way to reflect that accurately and letting it be known that that is a cultural aspect. So that's why I think a box for culture would be kind of important. It's probably more important than some of the other boxes that are on there.
This is Karina, and I have added this suggestion to our a list, and I do know it's a very long list already. And I know also that there are only a few centers that do tribal work, which is probably why there isn't that much of a discussion around it. So I know it's a question for those who work with them, but it's just a few centers. So
Okay.
That's probably why, yes, there isn't like a clear solution right now. Okay.
Well, thank you for adding that suggestion, Karina.
You're welcome. Not a problem. I believe, I'm not sure. I think Arizona or someone else does, but I don't think I've heard them on the phone. So, you know, it's depending on who's the phone also.
Okay.
Who's on the call. Okay. Then the next question was about...
Karina?
Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
This is Roxy again. Aren't there a lot of other cultural organizations that are not tribal, though, too? I mean, I'm thinking, like, here we have bridge builders that people in our center have worked with, but they are strictly, they're cultural-based organizations. I would think that those would be everywhere.
I know that cultural organizations, faith-based organizations, the other centers work with them. I was specifically referring to tribal, that those, I know those are just a few states. As to the others, I'm not sure exactly.
Okay, thanks, Karina.
Sorry, and it seems like maybe those who are on the call do not have such examples. So the next question is about the satisfaction and outcome differentiation for participants. And it seems that at the center, they typically always respond exactly the same. Is this what others are seeing too, with the responses to the customer satisfaction and the initial outcome measure questions?
The UNM CDD don't see that particularly. There is some differences between all our different projects between those two.
But for the same group of people, for the same activity, let's say, do the answers to the customer satisfaction coincide with those to the initial outcome measure?
Not always exactly.
Okay.
I would say 90% of the time, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's real high at our center.
This is Lori in Nashville. I would agree that it is very high at our center, too, though I will say on occasion there will be an exception where you satisfied with this activity or training will be no, and then the next question or will be highly dissatisfied, and the next question will be very satisfied. And all I can think that they mean is that they wanted more of the training or something. I'm never quite sure when the two answers are completely disparate, what they mean. So I just thought I'd add that in.
Well, that's interesting, and it sounds like it's pretty common for responses to be similar.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I'll skip to the second to last item just to be sure we get to it. So how do others keep track of work that doesn't necessarily need to be reported, such as applying for grants and contracts? And I'd like to add a suggestion that Donna and I thought of today, because applying for grants and contracts is not supposed to be reported in years. You're supposed to report on a project or a contract once you actually obtain it, and then you can enter it in the project's data set. But as you may know, in the PPR, only the funding is reported from the project records. And you could, for projects that you're applying for, grants you're applying for, you could create project records for them and enter no funding so that it does not impact the calculations mm-hmm. in the leveraged funds section in the PPR. And as it was also suggested earlier, you can use a custom field with options to indicate the status of the project, and then you even have a placeholder. Once you obtain the project, you can turn that into the regular project record and include the funding with it. So that is our suggestion to that. Do others have other thoughts, or do you have other ways of managing such data?
I guess I don't understand why we would be reporting something that, I mean, I had seen ears as a way to report what they want to hear from us. I mean, why would we want to be putting in something that they don't want in NEARS? I mean, if I don't understand it correctly, maybe.
I understand your point, and that is very true. NEARS is meant to be for reporting what's required of you to report. However, there is this concern about other work that happens at the center that folks don't get credit for. And this suggestion for grant applications is kind of a workaround to have a placeholder, at least, for just to maybe at the bigger center for the data coordinator to know what's going on, what others are working on, because it may be hard to know what's going on, make sure you have all the data in years. So it can be useful to enter a project record for a grant application just to have a placeholder, not to report it in that year, but just as a placeholder.
I see. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is George McKinley at the in Nevada. Mm-hmm. I never thought about using it as a program, but in terms of activities, especially when it comes to research, the preparation required for doing some grants means that you're doing fairly extensive research and sometimes even need studies to prepare for the grant. And so some of that work is reflected in the types of projects we're doing, usually out of the core, to prepare for those grants. And that's where I would record some of that effort. It's not all of it, but it's not the minutiae of submitting a grant, but it certainly is the background and the reason why we're doing the grant. And that's, for me, the right place to report that type of effort.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that can be true when extensive research is involved, but grant proposal doesn't always involve research. Extensive research. So I think that's where the question comes in. Where do you enter a grant proposal?
This is Roxy. We do enter our research grant proposals, but only because we made that a specific measurement of our goal accomplishment in our proposal. We have a certain number of research grants that we have to prepare every year to meet a goal. So we do enter just the research grant proposals for that reason. But on the other hand, I also know that we do tons of work at our center that is not reflected in NERS. We don't expect NERS to give us credit for everything that we do, so to speak. NERS is just a database that certain things need to be reported. And there's a lot of work we do that is not reflected in NERS.
Yeah, I think of it as things that go on out, you know, your outputs into the bigger world. It's not about professional development. It's not about developing things. It's not about the work that you do to get ready. It's about what other people, get from the center. That's, I think, the way it was explained to me.
Right, and that is, and then it's the way it still is. We're, I guess I should clarify with this. We're not trying to encourage that everyone enter everything. It's not a change in approach in what data are entered. It's still a matter of what's required and, you know, what the federal funders want to see. I think this was suggested now in the survey, and this is a question that comes up every now and then. I get this question: where can I report a grant proposal? Because it's a pretty major work, and yet it doesn't seem to fit anywhere. So that's where we're trying to find a solution. Okay. Are there any other questions that I haven't brought up? And the only item I skipped was about the product dissemination tool. If you have anything about that, or if you want to email me, you're welcome to. But is there any question you want to bring up before we end the call?
I have a question regarding training. This is Vicki at Cincinnati. We have several international students. So when we actually put them in as students, then we run into the problem is that they go back to their home country and then we are being asked to survey them. How do other people handle that?
Do they not have email? Or, I mean, are you just losing touch with
them?
They
do have an email. The problem is that it's not really pertinent information that they're going to be giving once they survey because they're working in another country. So it doesn't really impact our particular doesn't
yeah,
quite fit.
I see what
yeah.
you mean.
So I don't know how other centers do that, if they just don't enter them in NERS, if there is some way that in the future that we can, when they run the survey, for those that are supposed to be surveyed, that they basically filter out the international students so we don't get dinged for it, that they didn't fill out the survey. But we can contact them, but it doesn't necessarily do any good for the actually getting the information that they want.
I will say that's an interesting question, and I have not heard that before. Although I see your point, and I will say for the moment, I think it's good to still try to include them and maybe explain in your report the situation in a narrative section at the moment, because it is a legitimate reason to not have surveys completed. On the other hand, you do not want to not capture that you have trainees you're training. If this becomes a bigger question network-wide, it might be that we'll get a response from MCHB or AIDD. But I would not exclude them from reporting for now.
Okay. Of course, some of them, you'll get a response that really doesn't help your cause any.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just wondering why you would even want to pursue that. I mean, if there was some way of...
But I think it goes to show that if you're at least getting a response, that they're at least responding to something, even if it's not has all the meat that you really want. You're able to get a hold of them.
Yeah, but then again, you know, no, they're not involved in any MCH programming. They're not working with underserved populations within the United States. So it just seems like once you then get the final survey feedback on that, it doesn't necessarily help that you have made an impact if you have enough of them.
Do you find that the majority of them, if not all of them, that are international fall into that category? That they don't respond the way they should?
We have had people respond and do the survey. The thing is that it has absolutely doesn't help. I mean, they are not experiencing the same medical field in another country as they are here. So if you're asking them certain questions, it's not necessarily going to correspond with anything that we do here.
This is Chris DeLeon from Kennedy Krieger. So I'll say for at least for ours, I know that a lot of our trainees, we do have a significant number of international trainees that come through on a pretty consistent basis. And for us, I mean, that holds true what you're saying for some of them, but for a lot of them, we notice since we do the surveys at a 1, 5, and 10 year, sometimes they'll leave the country for a few years to either like finish up training or do whatever. But a lot of times they'll end up back within the U.S. at some point as well. So, I mean, I think it might just be dependent on the program itself and like what, I guess, what population of international trainees you're working with. But we do know, like, especially for us, a lot of our trainees either come back and they'll either come back as faculty or they'll be back in the U.S. in some other capacity at a different university or a different program somewhere else in the U.S. When we do follow up with them, they will have that, they will be meeting that, like, the criteria when we get like a 5 or 10 year mark.
Okay.
Well, that is helpful, and I will also try to talk internally and see if this is something that we can at some point bring up with AIDD and MCHB, maybe in revising the survey to include something relevant about international experience. Of course, I cannot promise anything at this point. Mm-hmm. But I'm sorry?
No, thank you.
Okay, you're welcome. And since I see we are now over our end time, I thank you all for staying over and for the conversation today. And our next call is in October. As you know, I'll send a survey before and reminders. And in the meantime, I know it's a busy month ahead, so good luck with finishing all the data entry and submitting the report. And you know where to find me. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to email or call. Thank you again, and have a nice afternoon.
Thanks, Karina.
Thank you.
Karina.
Bye-bye. Bye, Karina.